Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Well, that's not exactly the best way to charm someone into reading your book, is it? But that's exactly how King Solomon started his journal, known as Ecclesiastes. Welcome to Insight for Living, featuring another message from Chuck Swindoll in the series titled Living on the Ragged Edge. You're about to hear Chuck continue our study in this unplugged confession of despair. And we'll discover how the cynical observations of this ancient man of wisdom clearly parallel our own experience. We're looking at Ecclesiastes 1, verses 1 through 18. Chuck titled today's message, Chasing the Wind.
Many years ago, there lived a king who decided he would write in a journal what he had discovered about life. Since he had peace at his disposal, his father had left a rather large fortune in his care. His father had fought the battles, and now his son enjoyed peace, 40 years of it. Imagine, four decades in a nation without war. And instead of things going into the defense budget, things now went into his pursuit to discover life. And he was so thoughtful that he sat down with a pen and he wrote in his journal the truth. There's not a lie in his book. In fact, God cared so much about what the man wrote as he looked at it through the windows of his castle. God said, "This is good enough for the world to read." And he preserved it for the ages. It appears in the Old Testament under the heading Ecclesiastes. Strange name for the book. It means preacher, or one who addresses an assembly, if you prefer, speaker of the house of life. Someone who can declare in an inspired, absolutely inerrant manner the truth about life, and he saves you all the money, time, and energy. Don't bother, just read what he says. And it'll be so depressing, you'll feel like you can leave under the door, not through it. The guy tells the truth. His basic premise, he doesn't make us wait till the end of the book to read. He says it right at the beginning. Vanity of vanities, says the speaker, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Now, in Hebrew literature, when there is a repeating of the same word, even once, though here it's repeated three times, vanity, 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 the purpose is a lot like our exclamation point or underscoring. It is to declare the superlative. Super vain, completely empty. Nothing to it. Apathy rules. It looks like it's substance, and you dig into it, and it's nothing. It holds out hope that it is a bright, warm light, and you go for it, and it is a cold, empty nightmare. Put it together, if it is under the sun, it won't satisfy. It won't work. He even asks, verse 3, what advantage does mankind have in all his work? Good question. All his work which he does under the sun. The key word is advantage. The term advantage is translated from the original word, which means that which is left over when a given transaction is complete. We would say when it is all said and done, when you turn the light out at the end of life, when you close the door to your business and walk away, when you leave the fresh grave of someone you loved and related closely alongside, When it's all said and done, the surplus, the final advantage, what does it say? Zero. Nothing to it. If you're living out your marriage under the sun and you're not living above or beyond the sun, your marriage is on its way to decay. If you're doing your business and pulling it off with your strength and your wisdom and your might and your plans, and God is sort of absent from it, you'll call on Him if you need Him, you can forget real success. You certainly will not know fulfillment. If you're pursuing an education and you've gotten this degree and you're going for another one and you have all these people around you telling you it's worth it, you can do it, and it's all being pursued for your purpose and with your goals in mind, I got tragic news for you. You're going to wind up bored and frustrated. If your world is work, you've got the same kind of future. Hugh Prather writes in his book, Notes to Myself, if I had only forgotten future greatness and looked at the green things and reached out to those around me and smelled the air and ignored the forms and the self-styled obligations and heard the rain on my roof and put my arms around my wife, perhaps it's not too late. We who worship our work and play at our worship have gotten things all fouled up. The writer tells us before we even attempt, it's vain under the sun. Look at your work. You toil for a promotion and the guy next to you gets the promotion. Promises for relief from the government fail. There's nothing left. There's no advantage. Are you getting the depressed picture? Good. That's what the writer wants you to see. You want some examples? You want to hear life under the sun? Look at verse 4. A generation goes and a generation comes. There's futility in the cycle. Generation comes, a generation goes. But maybe there's hope in the earth since it remains forever. Maybe somehow in God's spinning of this planet into space, He put purpose within the earth. Well, originally He did, but Romans 8:20 says that it's subjected to futility. Do you know that? In fact, it groans, it travails as if a woman in labor waiting for the birth to purpose. Romans 8:22. It waits for there to be a relief to the groaning. There's not any happiness on this earth or within it. Look at some illustrations. Look at the sun. The sun rises and the sun sets and it hastens around the other side of this big old globe to rise again. And I see monotony written in Solomon's words. Isn't it funny the difference between Solomon and Jeremiah? Stop and think about that. Jeremiah says that even the rising of the sun reminds him, great is his faithfulness. But Solomon says, the rising of the sun, ugh, yuck. Why? Because Solomon is seeing only as far as the sun, not beyond it. Remember, his purpose and his pursuit is under the sun. I won't let you forget that. There is no meaning to this crummy existence called earth and life on planet Earth if you live only beneath the perspective of the sun. Now, I say that regardless of your profession. The sun, even in its circulatory course, or this earth, however you prefer to see it, is nothing there. Another endless cycle. Well, how about the wind? It blows toward the south, it turns toward the north, it continues swirling along on its circular courses, the wind returns. And there is in this great satellite picture we see of the earth on occasion, the swirl of the wind. Don't you see it in your evening news? It's bright white standing against the stark blue of this earth, and you see it swirl, and you'll look at it tomorrow, it'll still be there, still swirling, still moving in its courses, in its course, and it's a monotonous, repetitive thing. And the rivers, they flow into the sea, and the sea isn't full. You know why? Well, sure you do. The sun evaporates enormous quantities of water. As the moist air cools, vapor condescends as it forms clouds, and clouds in turn drop across the skies and into this earth, rain and sleet and snow and hail. And even our friends in Utah and other places in the Midwest suffer from terrible floods, terrible times of natural disaster, only to have the river swell and flow into the sea and the evaporation and the rain. And it's just like that, just like that. The old songwriter was right. Old man river just keeps rolling along. Maybe Christofferson had Ecclesiastes 1:7 in mind when he wrote, "I'm just a river that rolled forever and never got to the sea." You feel like that? Feel like your life is like the wind? Your life is like the river? Your life is like the sun? You know why you feel like that? Because it is. That's why. If it's under the sun, it's running around in circles. I think verse 8 was written with a deep, long sigh. Oh, all things are wearisome. Man isn't able to tell it. You're told as a little child to keep looking and keep discovering because there are things there you've never seen before, and there's beauty there and there's wonder there, and it's true to a point. But as you get older, you get more sophisticated and you start wanting telescopes and microscopes so that you can look into the depths of it. And you cannot seem, if you have that kind of mind, to get telescopes long enough or microscopes thick enough to see enough because your curiosity is aroused. And what you find is not satisfaction, but another question mark. And you seek another degree to answer that question mark. And when you get that question mark removed, there's another degree you've got to have. And that question isn't answered because it opens up to you a whole world of futility and you become a philosopher. People who talk about things they don't understand, but they make it sound like it's our fault. You just don't have answers, but you got a lot of questions because you've kept looking for that answer under the sun, and it isn't there. When will we learn? When will we learn? And it's nothing new. This is no great, wondrous discovery. Not even the ear is filled with hearing. If you doubt that, you haven't looked for a sound system lately. You look for a sound system for your home, you go to one place and they'll say, "This is fine, if you don't mind, spend $1,000. They'll say, "But, you know, there is something more." And you say, "What is it?" "Well, if you want to go $2,500, we'll give you a speaker the size of this pulpit. And we put two of them in there and we'll call it stereophonic. And if you want the max, you get quadraphonic." I saw a guy in his car last week, had four speakers. They were so big he couldn't see around them as he was driving his little Volkswagen. All speakers. And you could just see the windows, boom, 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 like a drum, boom, boom. I got out of his way fast. The guy has one rolling sound system, and I'll guarantee he's not satisfied with it. Because there's always some other sound, man. It is unbelievable. You think this is good. You put this in a Mercedes and double the size of the speakers, it will blow you away. The ear isn't satisfied with the hearing. Is this new? Verse 9, "That which has been is that which will be. And that which has been done is that which will be done." Nothing new. Rudyard Kipling traded poetry for prose on one occasion when he wrote, "The craft that we call modern, the crimes that we call new, John Bunyan had them typed and filed in 1682. There ain't nothing new out there, folks. And if you find it and you didn't know it before, I've got other news. It won't satisfy if it's under the sun." He even says, "I'd like to forget it." Verse 11. There's no remembrance of those things or the later things which will occur. Ever felt like that at the end of a day? "I'd like to forget this day." How about at the end of the pursuit of some degree? "I'd like to forget that school or all that stuff that I gained and all those hours I spent and all of that work I put in, I just like to forget it. Don't look at me like that. You've had thoughts like that. So have I. Apathy rules. Who cares? And so he introduces us to himself. He says, I'm the speaker. Verse 12, I'm the speaker. Koheleth, I'm the one who addresses the assembly. And I'm talking horizontal existence. If you haven't marked your Bible yet with these words, I'd like you to take your pencil and go to verse 3 and mark the last three words. Because you're going to forget that through this book, and you're going to wonder if this preacher has begun to doubt and stop believing. I'm just telling you what's under the sun. I'm committed to telling you the truth. Verse 3 closes with the words. Verse 9 does too. In the middle of verse 13, you'll see the words under heaven. Mark those words. Under the sun, verse 3. Under the sun, verse 9. Under heaven, verse 13. In the middle of verse 14, under the sun. Mark that. That's his perspective. So let me show you what this man did, since his name Shlomo is from Shalom, meaning peace, and since his time was in a time of peace, he didn't go on a search and destroy mission. There was no war to fight. He went on a seek and explore mission. You do that in a time of peace. You put the money into pursuit of these other things. And he says in verse 13, here's what I did. I set my mind, and there's real resolve in that. I rolled up my sleeves. I cleaned off my windshield. I set my sights. I pushed forward. The same kind of resolve you feel when you take off in a backpack. I decided I will take that climb. All right? What did he do? Well, to seek and explore by wisdom. That's human wisdom concerning all that's been done under heaven. Let me give you a little bit of insight into these two words because they describe his mission. The first word in Hebrew, translated seek, means to investigate the roots of a matter. It's a theoretical term. You would use it as a doctoral candidate writing your dissertation. You're not asked to do practical things to get your PhD in your dissertation. You're asked to do a theoretical project. And you roll up your sleeves and you dig into the libraries and you maybe even travel and you spend a year, two, as much as three or more years pursuing that dissertation. You are, in the terms of Hebrew, of this Hebrew word, you are seeking in your research. And any person who claims to be academically authentic must love to do research. And this man says, I decided I would research the roots of those things. And so he began to pursue the origin of them, and we'll get into them in this book. And he began to reason out the outworking of them. And he made notes on the results of them as he pursued this study. And he pushed at it. And he shoved aside all of the affairs of state. And he pushed aside the needs of his home. And he set aside his religious moorings. And he dug into the subject, whether it was passion or sex or pleasure or philosophy or money or whatever, and there's a whole book of them here. He went after them to find out what they were and how they got started and what the results were. But that's not all. This man is a unique kind of intellectual. He also explored. Now, that term means to examine all sides, and it's a practical word for experimentation. Not only did I seek to study the gardens and the lakes and rivers and reservoirs and streams, I did experiments with them. I pursued those things to the point of getting involved in them. I got wet in the streams. I participated in the sex. I investigated the whole world of pleasure. I went after it, as we will see next time in our study, the whole world of wine and women and song and eating and drinking and, quote, being merry, unquote. I got into it and I felt the burn of the booze as it went down my throat, and I felt the heady feeling in my head when I gave myself to it. I experienced the full orbed world of a sexual involvement, and I would suggest right to the limits of perversion. I sought it all the way, because if there's something to that, I want that satisfies. Now, you've got a journal of a man that stopped at nothing when he sought and when he explored by human wisdom all things under the heavens. Remember, no limit in his brains and no limit in his bucks. We're talking full investigation. And he says, it is a grievous task which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with. What is living life under the sun? In fact, I've taken a moment to mark some things in my Bible that describe his initial findings. In verse 13, I mark grievous task and affliction. That saves me a lot of searching. If I want to read truth from a man inspired of God who was not only researching it but experiencing it, and save myself the headache, time, scandal, and hassle of it all, I just need to remember he says it's a grievous task and it's an affliction. I notice in verse 14 he says it's like striving after wind. You might note that. Words mean chasing the wind. He says it again in verse 17. It's like striving, it is striving after wind. In verse 18, the student's favorite verse, in much wisdom there's much grief, and increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. Now, I think if my daughter were reading that, she'd write homework over verse 18, because that's part of it. In other words, apathy rules. All this busy work called the student activity and student assignments and all, I've talked it out, I've seen it out, I've listened, I've given it my best shot, verse 17 says. I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I realize that this is chasing the wind. I've been there.
These candid thoughts from Solomon certainly stir up longings in our own hearts as well. A study in Ecclesiastes only affirms the futility of pursuing idols that fail to satisfy. You're listening to Insight for Living and a message from Chuck Swindoll titled Chasing the Wind. Now, you can hear today's program again by going to our website to stream Chuck's teaching directly through your computer, or you can take advantage of the free mobile app in order to hear Insight for Living whenever and wherever it's convenient for you. While you're on our webpage, check out the wealth of helpful articles and video clips available at insightworld.org. And if you've never contacted Insight for Living by phone, we'd love to connect with you. Chuck presented an uplifting sermon called Encouragement Served Family Style. When you call today, we'll send a free CD copy. Again, it's called Encouragement Served Family Style. Well, at Insight for Living, we're extremely careful when recommending books to you. We know your time is limited, and sometimes reading a good book is a luxury not everyone can afford. And with that in mind, we can heartily recommend an excellent book from trusted author Jerry Bridges. It's called The Pursuit of Holiness. When you give a donation to support this ministry, we'll send a copy of Jerry's book, hand-selected by Chuck Swindoll and the team at Insight for Living. You select the size of your donation, bearing in mind the value of this book and the impact of this daily Bible teaching program on your life. Again, when you give a donation of any amount, request a copy of the book, The Pursuit of Holiness. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-7222. 1-800-772-8888. That's 1-800-772-8888. And online, go to insight.org.
Step onto the ancient theatrical stage where biblical history was written. Experience the land and the book with Chuck Swindoll.
Feel the cool breezes sweep across the Sea of Galilee. Walk along the banks of the Jordan. Take time to pause and reflect. Picture Jesus being baptized in this very river.
Tours leave for Israel every day. You have lots of choices, but there's only one tour where you benefit from Chuck Swindoll's insight.
This isn't a mere fact-finding trip. Insight for Living makes every effort to save time for your journey to be filled with adventure and yet punctuated with laughter and seasoned with spiritual moments you'll treasure for the rest of your life.
March 10th through the 21st, 2014, with an optional pre-tour Red Sea Experience, March 7th through the 11th.
You know, you'll never read your Bible the same way. Come with Cynthia and me to the land of Israel.
Call 888-447-0444. That's 888-447-0444. Or visit us online at insight.org/events.
The Insight for Living tour to Israel is paid for and made possible by only those who choose to attend.
Chuck Swindoll's study through the book of Ecclesiastes, Living on the Ragged Edge, continues Friday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Chasing the Wind, was copyrighted in 1983, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2013 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide.